Well, I have the real pleasure of having Mike Bryan with me. Mike, thanks for joining us on the ATP podcast.
Good to see you, Jill.
I have to go over some numbers because this is, everybody knows what an incredible career you had, but I need to reflect. Thanks. Obviously, number one in the world. You hold the record for the most majors and men's doubles titles. Do you know how many that is?
124.
No, that's titles, but major titles.
Oh, majors.
Do you know
okay.
That? Yes, you're right. Yes, 124.
I do know the major.
I'm going to quiz you 18. On your career. Yes.
18.
Most weeks at number one.
Yep.
Yeah. How many?
Over 500. I think it was 509.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
Gold medal in London.
With Bob. Got the mixed with Lisa Raymond. It was
that's
bronze.
Right. Yep.
In London, and Bob and I got the bronze in 2008
Beijing.
In Beijing.
I know, I was with you there.
Oh, yeah, that's
yes.
cool.
Yeah, and Davis Cup title.
Davis Cup title.
Am I missing anything? It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's all she wrote. But yeah, it was a fun ride. 23 years on tour, and I've been retired now for 2 years. And
2 years already?
It's been a fun transition just into prioritizing the family with two little babies, and it's been different, you know. Yeah. Now that, you know, that competitive juices are still flowing, but don't really have that outlet to put it into. A part of me misses it, but it's fun to get out here and playing some legends events once in a while, and just seeing all the guys and being at tournaments like here at Indian Wells, and it brings back great memories, and we had lots of fun.
When you reflect on what you've accomplished, which is incredible, how do you view it? Or do you view it differently? I mean, how do you view the tennis now and what you've actually accomplished?
Yeah, it was a lot, you know. Like, we went really hard and went after it for so long at a high level, and we kept our standard really high. And we're always just focusing on trying to improve and get better. And we had this no satisfied mentality where we'd win a big one and it's like, where are we going next? Let's keep going. And we were always pushing each other. And so we never really took the foot off the gas pedal for so long and never really kind of exhaled and looked at what we accomplished. We were just kind of always striving for the next thing. So now that we're done, just to slow down and I'm just kind of, you know, like, I don't know how we got as many titles as we did, just because I know how hard it is just to win one. But he was pushing me, I was pushing him. And, you know, we every practice was intense. We had great coaching in our corner, great trainers keeping us healthy for most of our career. And we had a lot of fun along the way. But, we were just super serious about what we did. And, you know, we just had these lofty, lofty goals. And good body of work, you know. It's a good body of work. And I'm happy that we are able to play on some of the biggest courts in the world and bring that twin energy and that passion for the game and doubles, and people were able to witness it. And we still just, you know, really love this game, and that's why we're not going anywhere. We'll be out here with you. And you know, Bob's got the Davis Cup position, which is cool. And yeah, so we're still we got our feet in the game of tennis, and it's been such a big part of.
I'm glad you brought up the energy, because I think that's something that everyone talks about when they talk about the Bryan brothers, is the energy that you brought. And we miss you guys.
Oh, yeah, we miss you too.
You talked about serious, but it was so much fun, and you guys really felt like you looked like you had a lot of fun on the court. How were you able to sustain that? You said 23 years on the tour. That's incredible, but that never wavered.
Yeah, I mean, we knew we played our best when we had that positive twin vibe. And when we were on the same page and out there, I mean, you always saw us bouncing around or throwing a few chest bumps, and we like to bring the crowd into it because it felt like it gave us the six-man advantage. But we, you know, deep down, I think we really loved the game. Thanks to my parents, they just made it fun at a young age and took us to tournaments like this when we were 10 years old, and to see these great champions, we just dreamt about it from so young. So when we were out there, we felt kind of lucky to be doing what we were doing. And I think we truly loved just the twin thing. Like, it felt like you had your best friend on the court with you. And, like, I think that was our main advantage over most teams, because the margins are so fine in doubles. Everyone's so good. It's a worldwide sport, and there's so much talent. But when we were out there, when we had that, when we were clicking on the same page, that twin energy was kind of magical. Like, we were always just moving together, and
filling
the
like
holes.
Another sense.
Yeah, it's like we were tapped in on a different level, and is that intuition just where to be, and things would kind of just tip in our favor when we were, you know, when we had that little X factor. When we didn't have it, I felt like we were just like the average team. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of days where he started getting under my skin, and that brother and I got under his skin, and then that sibling rivalry was, you know, it wasn't always pretty, you know. So
how would you get past that? Yeah.
I mean, we played our best when we were, you know, when he wasn't instructing me what to do, or I wasn't telling him what to do, and we just kept our mouth shut and just is only positive, like, you know, great shot, just very minimal stuff, and just we use signals. We like to play fast and just keep it, you know, just positive with the feed and energy. But whenever there was too much talking, I felt it could sink the ship pretty easily, mm-hmm. just because I'm very sensitive to whatever he says, tells me, and he's same with him. So it's a good lesson. I feel like doubles teams are like good marriages. Mm-hmm. We'd have good communication off, you know, off the court, and we'd air it out when there's things that we need to talk about. But on the court, just it was better when there was no leader. You know, okay. If I felt like he was bossing me around, or I'm bossing him around, or even if he rolled his eyes, you know, it's easy to just give him a quick, like, little snip and say, you know, say something that's hurtful. And he knew exactly what to tell me, that he knew all my insecurities,
he knew how to get to you.
All my soft spots, and he can hit me below the belt pretty easily. You know, he knew I was a little bit insecure about the serve. And if he made a comment, or if I told him something to do on his back end, you know, it wasn't pretty. So
I'm assuming you probably knew that was about to happen with your twin intuition.
Yeah. I knew it was coming out. So like in our biggest matches, we would just play, you know, just play, and we like to play quick. Most teams like to talk for, you know, half a minute in between points but we just use quick signals, and we like to just read the plays more. We wouldn't drop so many poach plays. We would just, like, he would serve it. He actually never told me where he was serving, which is a no-no in doubles.
Yeah.
You know, you never want to leave your partner high and dry on, like, a wide serve. But I kind of knew where he was serving. You just throw it up and hit it. He actually hit me in the back of the head a couple times because I was pinching the middle early or something. Thought he was going to go tee. That was what our main advantage over most team is when the twin secret sauce was our energy when that was going well. It was a huge advantage.
You mentioned that so many of these matches come down to just a couple points. We talk about that all the time. And what impressed me about you guys as well is maybe you might not have been playing your best tennis in certain matches, but as soon as you hit one good shot, you could easily switch that energy, that negative, into a positive.
Yeah.
Can you relate to that? And what did you say to yourself in those moments where you can get through those tough moments so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, in pro doubles, it comes down to a few of the big points, like either the deciding points. A lot of times you're playing breakers. So the matches hinge on some really pivotal moments. And I think the great players, they really trust themselves and back themselves. I would always tell Bob, like, let's just go for it. Because your tendency is to play a little bit tight and just make the return, but in pro doubles, you're usually having to aim for like an alley or get the ball in the middle, and you got to let it rip, right? So I would always be encouraging him to just, you know, trust his talent and just let it go, and he'd do the same for me. And you, it's tough to sleep if you have a big point and you just play it safe and you don't hit it pure.
Yeah.
So like we would swing out in the biggest moments and, you know, try to stay relaxed. I feel like if you always, you know, you see our feet moving, right? Like our, you know, if you get nervous, your feet lock in.
Yeah.
I feel like people get stuck. And in doubles, I think moving without the ball is really important. Like it's easy to just kind of lock in with the feet, but you got to be anticipating or your partner's going to hit it and be in the right spot. So we'd always bounce around just so our feet don't lock and get stuck in the mud. Mm-hmm. And so we would bring the energy, but also go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, in between points, if you had, you know, different methods to just kind of relax yourself.
Yeah.
And, some players breathe. I like to kind of relax into my body and relax my hand because I would grip it too tight sometimes. Just little tricks to calm the nervous system down.
Yeah. You mentioned that energy and fun again. I wanted to ask you about, because you said your parents, you credit your parents a lot from the beginning. How did they make it fun for you from the beginning? Do you remember?
Yeah. Well, so my dad owned a club in Camarillo, California, and you know, it wasn't about like drilling us into the ground and working so much on technique. He knew that would come along, but at the early ages, we had these big group games where we're playing for prizes. The losing team would have to run up this mountain in the back of the club, and it was, he just made it very stimulating and fun. He was always had the microphone in his hand, and just
he still does
groups.
I think
and we were playing with our best friends, and we were just hanging out at the club, and it wasn't just all about playing. We'd, you know, go play capture the flag on the grass, and it was just it was where we grew up, and it he knew, my dad got that, you know, like it he knew that we had to fall in love with the game early mm-hmm. on. And that was the fire that would drive us, because it does take a lot of hours to be a champion. It does take a good amount of time.
I think people, you know, don't realize, like, the hard work behind the scenes.
10,000 hours yeah. by a certain age. And so if you're out there and the time's flying by because you're smiling and mm-hmm. you want to be out there, it's a great experience.
Yeah.
But some of these kids, like, they don't really love what they're doing, and it just makes it that much yeah. tougher. So, I mean, you have to – parenting's a big part of it. You know, like, we're bringing up our kids now, and Bob's got his three kids are playing tournaments every weekend.
Oh, my
goodness.
And
so, like, you know, they make it fun. They take them out to pizza after the match. It's not, you know, you don't come down on your kid if they lose a mm-hmm. match. It's just like you change the subject, talk about something else, and just reward effort. And but my dad was he's written parenting books now, or, like, he's got his formula, like, how to be successful. And a lot of it is just making it lots of fun, so kids are out there and they're having a blast and time flies by.
Did you ever play other sports?
We were predominantly tennis. Like, we played a little Nerf basketball. Does that count?
Yes,
and some ping pong. Nothing organized, because we played pretty much a tournament every weekend from, like, the local level. Started playing in Southern California. And, no, it was pretty much mm-hmm. Eyes on tennis from mm-hmm. a young age. But I don't discourage, you know, playing other sports, because yeah. I think it brings in the coordination and the athletic ability in different ways. So my little boy's playing t-ball. He's doing a little ice skating. Like, you know, keeping him balanced. But, yeah, if he wants to go for it, like, Bob's doing a great job. He brought his son to the Aussie Open, and he's just hooked now. You know, he saw the top guys. He knows the rankings by heart. He knows all their birthdays. He knows everything.
Who's his favorite player?
He loves Joker.
Joker,
yeah, he loves
okay.
Joker, and, yeah. and Joker hit with him one time.
Oh, so that's awesome.
He's got the bug. Little Bobby Jr. So he's 9 right now, and he's getting his UTR beefed up. So he's I think they're having a good time.
Yeah. yeah. And you said you still have your competitive juices flowing.
Yeah, that never goes away. Yeah. That,
yeah. Do you miss it a lot, and what do you do to kind of get that competitiveness still in you? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm ever with Bob, we're always playing a new game. So since we retired, Bob's playing, like, a lot of chess. So we've been battling chess back and forth. And that gets the competitive juices, not as much as playing out here. But Bob is just taking it to the next level, where he's almost like a grandmaster.
Wow.
Like, he wakes up super early. He reads all the books. He studies. He's got friends that are teaching him. So he's taking me over there. Yeah, I mean, we still, like, we're going to play Wimbledon, the Legends event, which is cool, and we play the Aussie Open. It's different. Like, it doesn't really matter, win or lose. But
do you like that feeling, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's less pressure. I mean, it does take a lot to keep the bodies going, and so that's the one thing I don't miss, is that it to be out here, it's a full-time job. Mm. It's you're eating perfectly, right, you know, timed out, and you're sleeping at the right times, and it's a lot of, like, ice baths and massage and stretching and band walks and just making sure your car is tuned up, and so we've letting that go a little bit, just because we want to spend time on other things. You only have so many hours in the day. That's the one thing I don't miss, but it's just a blast to be out there. Like, I just played this Dingles event. Tommy Haas ran this.
Yeah, you're explaining it to me.
New event out here, and there's some of the legends are playing, and it was fun. I just played against the number one USC team, and the game has, you know, gotten so much better. So, like, college tennis is, I mean, it looks like pro tennis now. Like, so these guys were embarrassing me.
I doubt that.
But yeah, it's watching it now on TV, and I watch a lot of tennis TV just to see, and it seems like the game is just sped up. the physicality has gone to another
dimension. That's what I want to ask you about, yeah.
And it hurts watching it.
It hurts, I know.
It just seems like they're moving just like cats to the corners, and it's just the points are a little bit longer, and the guys are swinging harder. Like, I remember watching Agassi back in 1988 here, and there was no one that hit the ball like him. It sounded like a shotgun, the way he hit it. But now everyone's hitting even that big, but bigger, and it looks like super tennis, you know. And you need just these flexible bodies that are strong, and they all have these like huge teams behind them. And if you don't have a team working on you, you get injured because it's just too demanding. Mm-hmm. And like to win a Grand Slam is like running a marathon, you know, like 7 marathons, yeah. You know. And so like after a long match, I'd probably feel like I got in a car accident. But these guys, it's amazing how they recover, and they come back and they do it time and time again. So that's one thing, that the bodies have to be just as good as the games. You can't just be a talented player. You got to work just as hard on your body.
Do you feel like, because you've only been retired for 2 years, did you feel like that physicality was already changing at the end of your career, or you see it even more significantly within these recent 2 years?
Just every year is just, I'm more and more impressed. There was a change toward the end of our career where, you know, you're playing, even like in doubles, like, you know, your second serve gets crushed by top level talent. It's just the ball spinning down. So Bob started staying back on the second serve a little bit more, try to get the forehand. It's just, that's why you see so much eye formation. It's just the returns got nastier and bigger. And it's just almost impossible to dig one off your shoelaces when it's coming in that hot. And that's why, the doubles players are trying to throw the kitchen sink with strategy and all this stuff. And that's why you see it, like it's changed, it's different. It's not across court rallies as much.
Yeah.
We noticed that. We never like to go eye formation, but toward the end of our career, we started, you have to, it feels like.
I wanted to ask you about that because you just mentioned that Bob started staying back a little bit more. But there's been a lot of talk about the guys on the singles, why some of them don't serve in volley a little bit more because of how many players are standing far back. Would you agree that they should, or do you think you mentioned the returns being so much better? Do you think that's one of the factors?
I mean, I always think if you get two guys to the net, there's a huge advantage. I feel like the strongest position is to get to net. And when you see like great doubles teams and they're like kind of a wall at net and there's two guys in the baseline, I think they win the majority of those points. Mm-hmm. But if you miss a first serve, I don't think it's bad just to stay back just because the return's coming in huge, and then try to work your way in. And these singles guys are so good from the baseline, and they have so much variety and they can hurt you in so many different ways. I think they're out there and they want to use their strengths, and they don't, you know, probably don't know it, the serve and volley game is well, and so they'd rather take a forehand and then get you running and then start it from there.
Yeah.
You know?
What's your perspective on the doubles teams now? Because I've talked to some other doubles players, and they feel like it would be stronger if more teams stayed together a little bit longer. Would you agree with that, or how do you view doubles?
Yeah, I mean, I always liked when teams stay together, just for the fans to follow a team, you know, like Knowles and Nestor. They played together for a lot of years. They won over 40 titles. And then it's a little bit sad to see them break up because just fans are starting to get behind them. They got all the slams under their belt, and it's fun to see those kind of legendary teams play together. But I think the system set up where it's tougher to get in tournaments. And so if you have a little bit of a bad patch, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, and no one wants to point the finger back at themselves. So it's like, you know, it's his fault. You know, and you don't have a lot of time. It's only a 1-year ranking system, so you can get some bad draws. You can lose a couple super breakers, and then it's like, we're not. I guess we're not the team. But yeah, you don't have a lot of team to build. You don't have a lot of time to build into the season. So you see teams breaking up, and it's unfortunate. It's great to see like Ram and Salisbury been together for a long time. I like the Colombians. They're always a fun team. The courts are usually packed. But there's a lot of new teams, and so it's always I'm always like, whoa. There's always gossip at the end of the season, like who's switching mm-hmm. with who. But it's just tougher to get in the Masters Series. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be like top 30 or in the world. So a bad 2 months with one guy, it's like danger zone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, maybe I have to find someone different.
Who would you say would be your toughest opponent?
I mean, looking back, I mean, Daniel Nestor, who we played 61 times.
61.
He beat us 30 times. Like, no one else beat us 30 times. He was great with a lot of different players. Like, as I said, Mark Knowles, Ninon Zimonjic, they're, like, a huge rival for, like, 3 or 4 years. They beat us in a lot of big ones. You know, we had a good rivalry with them. So Daniel Nestor and anyone, you know, he was good with Max Mirny. Yeah. He was just, like, had this slinky lefty serve, which had a lot of spin on it. It was really tough to read. He threw it over his head. He can go any direction. He played really loose, and he made really good poach moves, like good instincts. Mm-hmm. And it looked like he always had like ice in his veins. Like you could never tell if he was winning or losing. He was just had that same personality, like a poker face.
Yeah.
But he seemed like he always kind of rose to the occasion.
Yeah.
He played his good tennis when it mattered.
I want to talk a little off tennis because it's not easy transitioning from something you've done since you were so little, but you, Bob, both seem very, every time I see you, seem very comfortable, like with how you decided to stop the transitioning. Was that difficult for you? I'm guessing it wasn't. I mean, you seem
No. It's always difficult when you focus so hard and every day on something for basically your whole life, mm-hmm. and then one day it kind of that book closes and you got to start something different, and you're always like wondering, okay, what's next? I had my firstborn was born like almost the day I retired. So I just went,
Congratulations, by the way. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, no, it was great to, and it was during the pandemic. So I had a lot of time with him and I just kind of focused all my energy on trying to help build the family. And, so that's been a blast just being able to be home. And I think Bob was excited because he had already had 3 kids and it was like a traveling circus, really hard to bring 3 on the road. And, I felt like the time was right that we, felt like we did a lot and the bodies, it was really tough to keep him going. Bob had the hip surgery with the metal hip. He always said, mine's coming, mine hasn't come yet, but it's probably a matter of time. But it felt like it was harder and harder. It took more and more time to roll out there. I think we could have done it a little bit longer, but it takes 3 or 4 hours of working on the bodies.
Yeah.
And so I think the time was right. It's just now transitioning to something that you're is passionate about and having the, because we always set goals of what we wanted to accomplish. And so it's kind of ambiguous in that regard, but we're starting to figure it out. Like Bob's now the captain of the Davis Cup and he's got this singular focus on like just trying to win that and create a culture among the U.S. players and, you know, create that excitement that we had for Davis Cup and bring that back, you know, because there's a couple other team competitions. So mm-hmm. getting the guys all on the same page. And I think right now with the American crop of talent, mm-hmm. I mean, the time is now. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be out of the tournaments. If he wants me involved, I'm going to help him out too. But I think I'll be involved in some capacity. And so that's going to be cool. And then just being more involved in the USTA, like help with the younger guys too.
Nice. Yeah.
And, yeah.
And I mean, we have to mention your other passion that we hope we still get to hear, music. Is that still happening? What's happening with your music?
Yeah, I mean, music's awesome.
Wait, tell me again, keyboard, right? No.
I'm the guitar player.
Bob's the keyboard. Okay.
And we were playing a lot on the road when we were traveling, but now that we have more time, you know, I get up pretty early before the kids are up, and I'm always, you know, strumming the chords and learning some scales. And now that Bob's daughter is actually a good enough singer, she's like kind of a fronting our bands and some of our gigs. She's 11, but she's been taking lessons for like the 4 or 5 years now, mm-hmm. and she's amazing. Like she doesn't know how to miss a note. She's that good. Well, she sang the national anthem at the U.S. Open for the women's singles final, and she killed it. And so I think maybe she's the future of the Brian Rose Band. but we always do a gig here at Indie Wells, which is a blast and couple other tennis tournaments, and I mean, always improving that mm-hmm. as much as we can, and it's Bob's got a music room at his place, and I set up a little music room, and so we're definitely going to teach the kids music. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we can jam for hours, and it's yeah. we just kind of lose ourselves in the music.
Yeah.
And Bob and I feel like it helped our tennis when we were jamming together so much.
We guys did like so many other activities.
Like, yeah, we're always doing that together, and it felt like being on the same page. And when we're jamming to music, it kind of carried out onto the court and yeah. helped our chemistry and stuff and our energy.
You talked a lot about like the fun that you had. What do you feel like being a professional tennis player? What you learned the most that you feel like would be the most impactful for your kids, for how you bring your kids up?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that tennis teaches you. And going through junior tennis, you learn so many lessons. And I'm hearing some horror stories from Bob because he's driving his kids to tournaments down in Miami on the weekends. And, you know, there's tough line calls. You're dealing with parents. And but I think, that, you know, learning to deal with adversity there in certain situations, there's a lot. When you're out here, there's a lot out of your control. So... You know, you don't know if you're going to get a tough line call or the weather's going to be or different or an opponent's going to be playing better than you on the day. So there's a lot that you have to deal with and be okay with. And you learn how to control your emotions. You know, there's a lot of times you're angry and, you know, finding outlets to control that. Or you lose tough matches like we lost, I think, over like 350 matches. There's a lot of like sleepless nights. Mm. But bouncing back from defeat and it's just continual process of improvement and finding out like little areas you can gain a percent here, a percent there. And then, you know, trying to balance out the mental component, not just with the game and the body, but it's, you got to have the full enchilada, to compete. And I think it's rewarding, the character building that it gives you, because it's not an easy sport, yeah. right? Like it's tough at every level, and you set baby step goals. Like we just wanted to like get our first trophy, and then it's let's get free rackets yeah. from Wilson. You know, you have to get to a certain ranking in Southern California, and then it's like let's make the national team. You know, and then it's like go to Stanford. There's mm-hmm. just little things you check off, but along the way, it's like kind of who you become, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter. There's a lot of different levels you can have success at it, but I think it builds character and it builds resilience that you need in everyday life. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even in everyday life, it's even tougher than the tour because yeah. like you're a lot of it's everything's taken care of for you out here.
I know.
It's a safe net.
Yeah.
You know, so
I agree.
But yeah, I mean, super thankful for what tennis taught us. And I think for our kids coming up, I want them to go through that process yeah. and hopefully get them through junior tennis as quick as possible.
Well, I can see the appreciation yeah. you have yeah. for tennis, obviously, in your face. You said you don't miss so much the wear and tear on the body. What do you miss the most after being retired for a couple of years now?
Yeah, I mean, look, like the tour goes to some of the nicest places in the world. Like we're here in Indian Wells. We're going to be in Miami. It goes off to Monte Carlo. Like these places are just a blast to be at. Like they're just beautiful cities. And then you're with great guys. You know, it's a fraternity of guys. You see the same guys pretty much every week. And it's cool, just the locker room talk, the banter, you know, the just getting ready for matches, the preparation that it takes, and, like, the scouting report. It's just a fun process. And mm-hmm. Just being aligned with, like, your brother, just going after the same mission and the same goal. Mm-hmm. It just felt like you woke up with a little pep in your step and let's go get them, you know. So you kind of miss that. And yeah, and you miss like making little tweaks and little improvements in your game, and just finding different things to just move the needle forward.
Yeah.
And so that was always fun. But there's a lot to life, and now with the family, it's just it opens your heart. You yeah. know, it's like it's a special time, and so we're grateful that where we are now. You're always going to be attached to something that you did for so long. Mm-hmm. But there's always an expiration date on everything, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's one phase and on to the next.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. But I'm glad to hear you're still going to be around the sport.
Oh, yeah. No, this is...
I think the tennis world would not want it any other way.
No, this is... Yeah, we're stoked to just yeah. be a part of it and come out to certain tournaments. We'll be at Wimbledon. And,
good.
And it's just fun. You get goosebumps walking in these places that you...
Yeah.
You had just so many memories on these courts.
Yeah.
And so it still brings up you know, emotions and triggers too, and everything. You know, it's awesome.
And yeah. It seems like we're gonna see you and Bob's kids out here soon too, yeah, potentially.
I mean, yeah, if we're doing it right, you know. Like, but it's, I think it's almost like get hit by lightning. You see how tough it is. Like Bob's has his kids in these tournaments in Miami, and they're playing kids that are already homeschooled at like 8 years old, and the level, it's just it's so big. The sport's huge and growing, and to even play these level seven tournaments, it's a dogfight.
Yeah,
out of it. But you give them the tools and you see what happens.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. Well, seriously, Mike, you've given us so much time, so thank you. But it's great to hear your insights on your career and everything that you're doing. So we're happy to have you, and hopefully we'll have you again soon. But
you're
thank
the best.
You.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for all you're doing for the game. And you're one of the best in the business.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Mike.
All right.